Listen and stream the all-new talk radio, Freedom 106.5, for the only talk that matters.
And good afternoon. This is Freedom 106.5 FM. At this point in time, we present to you our simulcast program, The Lunchtime Doctor with Dr. Safia Mohammed. Of course, you can join us on our various frequencies, Freedom 106.5 FM, Sangeet 106.1 FM, Vibe CT 105 FM, and Sky 99.5 FM. The numbers that you could use to contact Dr. Safia Mohammed with your medical questions, 627-3223, 625-2257, and your messages on WhatsApp 3061065. Dr. Mohammed, how are you?
Good afternoon, Govind, and good afternoon to all those that are tuned in. Yes, I'm in studio, which makes things a lot easier for us to get your calls. So make sure, send those messages, send those calls. To those that joined us on CNC3 Morning Brew and also called in there, thank you. Here's where we have a lot more time. We have that full hour to really deep dive into your questions. You would have seen on this morning CNC3 Morning Brew and in your Health Plus, we talked a little bit about Parkinson's disease, because today is that day declared, not that it shouldn't just be one day but all across, but is that day declared to give a greater awareness to this particular disease, Parkinson's disease, because most persons may just know a person or so that may have a tremor, that may have a problem with the way they walk, that may be slower than usual and not realize what it is. So today we're going to talk a little bit more about that. We're also going to open up the lines for you to send in your questions. Let us know what's on that lunchtime plate. Let us know what health habits you've learned from this program, and encourage all that you know in your community to join in and learn something today. Who knows, we can save a life today and that may be yours.
All right, as always, folks, you've just heard our numbers there. Bases in, of course. Welcome to the Lunchtime Doctor. 627-3223, 625-2257. We have a call coming in already, and we say hello, good afternoon to, oh, we lost that one, of course, 3061065 on the WhatsApp. How was your long Easter weekend, Doc?
Oh, it was lovely. It was a mixture of doing work and, of course, finding time to rejuvenate, to rest, relax with my family.
Nice.
It is the month of Ramadan as well. So I was able to have my little one fast along with me and teach him those practices.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful. Of course, we spoke about, you know, fasting during Ramadan. The fast would have been broken by many.
Yes.
You know, so I hope everybody had a nice, healthy month of Ramadan. And after Ramadan, what happens? We're back to...
Well, the regular month of Eid, the day of Eid, which is the end of the month of Ramadan, has been declared a holiday April 22nd. And that would have meant, like all months, but the ones in the Islamic calendar, it's typically 29 or 30 days. After the month of Ramadan, we move on to another month. However, with the fasting that is required during that month of Ramadan is not typically recommended for the subsequent months.
Okay.
There are holy days where you can continue to fast, and that exists in all the religions,
right?
So it depends on what investment you want to take into your spirituality.
All right, beautiful. All right, let's get a question right here. Hello, good afternoon. Welcome to the Lunchtime Doctor.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Good afternoon, sir.
And salam alaikum to Dr. Mohammed.
Wa alaikum assalam.
You know, I want to ask you something, right? You know, you're living in the house with family and friends and everything, you know? But, you know, the one that closest to you sometimes, they call it mood swing or menopause or some kind of thing there is. And sometimes, like, they're okay to talk to you. You know, sometimes they might have an attitude or they get vexed with every little thing. Would you define what is menopause and mood swing? And but this is a common thing even in your workplace and much less for your home. Thank you, Doc.
So great question. But there are a few narratives that we said there, that were said there, that we really need to switch out. Here's the thing. What happens in all persons, both male and females, there are hormonal changes. It exhibits more so in females because of the changes in the reproductive system. We talked about this actually, that the changes in the hormonal levels vary in the way they may present. And yes, that conversation on mood swings, it's something that while it has been termed that, that's really something that should be completely slashed out of our narrative. There is an increased unfortunate sense of irritability. And that's simply because, again, when the hormones change or vary in different ways, and I'm not just saying this because of me being female, I'm saying this because this is what the data and the research has shown, that when there's a surge of one particular hormones, the way the body reacts, be it male or female, would be in a particular way. The person may also become more anxious. The person may become more introvert, so they become more depressed. So yes, one may feel a sense of high energy and then low energy, but that is because of all the varied changes that may happen to a female during the menopausal time. And this is where we require our male counterparts to really be our partners, our allies. You see, sometimes women themselves don't understand what's going on, so they may not be able to explain, say, the hot flashes or that menopausal transition that we talked about. They may be feeling, again, not just changes in their body, but changes in their mental health, changes in their behavior, and we talked about the changes in the mood. So we require our male counterparts to just have a little bit more sensitivity, a little less judgment. And yes, you know, there's a male menopause too. So I'm sure if you are unwell or if you are going through changes, you would want that level of compassion. I hope that answers your question.
All right, thank you there very much. Let's go to the WhatsApp now. Hi, Doc. My 13-year-old usually gets belly pains and cramps like a week before her period. Is this normal?
That is very normal. So let's explain what happens when a person's cycle, when there is indeed the menstrual cycle or the clearing of the menstrual cycle, there is changes within the reproductive anatomy, within the endometrial lining, and that's when there's the shedding, so the cramps tend to happen. 1 week before, that's perfectly normal. What would help at that point, and yes, some painkillers can be prescribed, or gentle exercises, gentle stretches, putting the warm bottle to the tummy area, all of that tends to help. Some persons like the relief that, say, a lemongrass tea, ginger tea, all of those things provide a level of relief. Hope that answers your question.
Okay, let's go to the phone lines. Hello, good afternoon. Of course, 6273223. Hello, good afternoon. Welcome to the lunchtime, doctor.
Good afternoon to the panel. I have a question for the doctor. I'll be 78 years in June. I'm diabetic, hypertensive, and I have heart ailment. Looking at TV, right? Just like this, saliva started ooze out from the right side of my mouth. And it never happened again until the day before yesterday, and it happened yesterday again. So I want to know if that is a sign of any ailment to come. Thank you.
Thank you so much for messaging in, for calling in. So yes, I'm happy you shared about it. And now you've noticed this particular symptom 3 times. It's not a sign of what things are to come. It is indeed one of the complications, one of the presentations of these non-communicable diseases. So here's what I suggest. Go make that appointment with your healthcare professional and get that checked out. There's certain signs and symptoms that are okay for us to monitor and watch. And then there are some signs, especially when we have a history of diabetes, hypertension, cardiovascular disease, that when they present, we take them as red flags and we get them checked out. Hope that answers your question.
All right. Once again, folks, you're listening to the Lunchtime Doctor on Vibe 105. FM, Vibe 105.1 FM, Sangit 106.1, Sky 99.5, and of course Freedom 106.5 FM. Continue to send your questions. Here's another question about a teenager. Hi, good afternoon, doctor. My 16-year-old son was diagnosed with 2 kidney stones measuring 5 centimeters or 0.5 centimeters. How is this possible at such a young age, and what do you recommend to mash it up so it would be less painful to pass out?
Okay, so yes, kidney stones can be presented at this young age. And you know, we talk often about dehydration. That's the number one cause when it comes to our those that have kidney stones that are formed. It's also important, and I'm pretty certain that it would have been explored. There may be some sort of infection within the bladder, within the urological system. There may be some sort of infection even within the kidneys. This is where it's so important. And this morning we actually had a conversation on too much salt and too much sugar, especially with our younger population. This is where we need to really take a look at what we're eating, because yes, too much salt in the diet can lead to the development of these kidney stones. Of course, some of it could just be purely genetic and have no cause or particular reason. This is where we need to play that lifestyle factors into the mix. So from today, let's just make sure he's well hydrated. We underestimate how much water we need to have, and then we overestimate how much salt we can have. In today's Guardian, in your Health Plus, we did an entire article on just how much salt. So we'll talk about that later on. In fact, last week, I believe somebody asked about how much salt. So we are going to move into that conversation later on. But for your son with the kidney stones, please make sure he sees a doctor. He makes sure they have an idea of not only the size of the kidney stone, but the location of the kidney stone. Increase his hydration. And if there are other worsening signs and symptoms, like blood in the urine, then there may be a different layer of treatment that need to be employed.
But I do remember a time, doctor, I did have kidney stones myself, and I was told to drink virgin olive oil.
Right.
I believe on, is it apple cider vinegar?
Right, the same apple cider vinegar.
And it passed out.
And we talked about that as well. The apple cider vinegar truly helps. So all of those things you can indeed utilize.
Let's get another one here. 6273-223-625-2257. Let's get a message here on WhatsApp. They're coming in so quickly. All right. Good day, doctor. I am experiencing, I hope it's diarrhea, but it's K-E-I-O-R-R-E.
Diarrhea. The person typed,
okay.
Yeah.
The mistype. Okay. I took omega-3 fish oil for 2 weeks, 2 weeks ago. Not sure if that has anything to do with it. I'm highly concerned.
Right. So yes, any sort of increased bowel motility will certainly have you concerned. What we need to do, first and foremost, we need to replace the normal gut bacteria inside there. A dose of Enterogema, a dose of any sort of probiotics will help. You need to maintain your hydration. What you put out is what you make sure you try to balance in. The omega and the fatty fish oils, those would have not precipitated the diarrhea. There are a couple flus, bacteria that are going around. It may be a bout of gastroenteritis that you got. Let's make sure we recalibrate, hydrate your system as properly as possible. And of course, try to get that dose of the Enterogema to get back the normal gut bacteria inside there.
Right, here's another one. Good day, doctor. My heart rate has dropped from 60 to 65 and is now 40 to 45. I'm on Amiodarone, right? 200. Also, I have irregular heartbeat and a leaky heart valve. Can that drug be the cause of it to drop my heart rate? Thanks.
Okay, so the Amiodarone would have been prescribed for the high blood pressure or to manage that increase, any sort of complications of the cardiovascular system. So no, the Amiodarone is not the reason for the heart rate dropping that low. However, that is indeed one of the ways of managing the high blood pressure. So that's not a problem. That's not what I'm overly concerned about. Heart rate of 40 to 45 is not something that will cause any or precipitate any problems, unless, of course, you're also taking, say, a Lasix, taking a diuretic, because then, depending on the combination of the medications, then it can drop to a point where you're feeling overly fatigued or dizzy. Again, let's look at what all the medications are. Let's have a 360 degrees approach. Let's also know what your other medical conditions are. It's so important that if you're prescribed to be on amiodarone, you continue to have that level of consistency. Keep in mind, medications is just a palliate. What we put into our system, what we eat, the level of exercise, our stress habits, our sleeping habits can all affect your blood pressure, and they can change the effects of the medication if they're not all well regulated. Hope that answers the question.
All right, let's get a call here. Hello, good afternoon. Welcome to the lunchtime, doctor.
Yes, Mr. Beeson. From Ahmed. Now, I'll let you imagine, right? Yesterday evening, around after 4, my little sister passed away. 2 years ago, she got a heart attack, right? And she went Mount Hope and they had the one where they take out the triple bypass, and then they had the one what they called stent, right? Medically, you know, a lot of us don't know how these things work, right? And if sometimes these things, it have a effect when you get heart attack and you do operation and think if it has caused you to die, right? Because she didn't get no pain, she wasn't ill, she didn't go in the hospital. She just remained there in the couch, and that was it. I don't know how to ask you that again, but if
no problem. Accept our sincerest condolences that she passed away. She's with God right now, and
she was only 62 years old.
62 years old, right? She lived a full life until 62 years old. Now, let's talk about that. The fact that she did have a heart attack and did have surgery. So you mentioned she would have had a stent placed in. Now, here's the thing, population. And I'm referencing this conversation because my mother is one who also had a heart attack and had to be rushed and had the same exact type procedure as a stent. Just hers happened on a holiday, so there were tons of other delays and challenges we had to manage. Now, when someone has a heart attack and now placed on certain surgical treatment, so the stent is a surgical treatment, while you may think it wasn't open heart surgery, it is still a highly invasive procedure. Once there's normalization of the blood pressure, that does not mean the person is now back to normal. Their heart has already been damaged. The ejection fraction, or the level to which the heart functions and all of the blood vessels around the heart, has incurred that damage so severe that the heart stopped. And this is something we really need as a population to wrap our minds around. We have people coming into the clinic and saying similar type of statements. Doc, the patient was good, you know, just she had a hypoglycemic attack some time ago. If there's this health damage, that means it will continue. So at the age of 62, she would have had other precipitating factors. And this is important for all those who are tuned in to know that if you've had some sort of cardiovascular disease, there's no cure for it. The medications palliate, or the medications just reduce the presentation. So with my mom, she has to continue, one, taking her medications, two, seeing the doctor regularly, three, making sure we do repeated blood tests, so we do it about every 3 months, so we have an idea of her cholesterol value. She also takes the time, and she was very much a quiet person inside. Now she meets with the neighbors after COVID has settled, and they take a little walk around the neighborhood. They do it together because, yes, we know there's always the opportunity for crime, so they do it together as a group. So yes, there's a level of exercise, and it's so important, not only after a heart attack, but we do all of these things to prevent the heart attack. So I'm really terribly sorry that your relative, your sister, passed away. I do hope that there is some peace and consolation that comes to your family, especially into the month of Ramadan. But I want you to know, and I hope that if she has any children as well, they are also at risk of a cardiovascular event. So let's take it in stride and look at the ways we can prevent further degeneration when it comes to your health in the family. Hope that answers the question.
All right, folks, 12:26 on time. You're listening to the Lunchtime Doctor. Let's get a call. Hello, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. Is this Ask the Doctor?
This is the Lunchtime Doctor. Yes, this is Dr. Safiya Mohammed.
Oh, hi, Dr. Safiya Mohammed. How are you?
Not too bad. And your question feedback is?
Yes. So, I started taking the female hormone blend. It's from Solaray.
Right.
About 3 or 4 weeks ago. And then I got my menstrual cycle 2 weeks ago, and I'm still on my menstrual cycle. So, this blend was meant to actually regulate my hormones and cause my period to become lighter and easier,
mm-hmm.
but actually I've just been bleeding for 2 weeks straight.
Oh my, yes, yeah. Now, here's the thing. Most of these hormonal regulatory tablets, medications, tend to take at least 1 to 2 or even up to 3 cycles before there's a proper regulation or impact or change onto the menstrual cycle. It may be that, and as you would know, when it comes to hormones, it's almost like playing Russian roulette, because we have to know what the norms are and then start a certain medication and see how does the body reflect that balance. It's also important, because it's your menstrual cycle, things like stress can directly, the cortisol levels can directly impact upon that menstrual cycle and, of course, your general health. So let's make sure that those things are in balance as well. You may not see the impact right away. If after the second cycle you're still not seeing that regulation, I will certainly suggest to return to that healthcare professional who would have made the recommendation and just let them know they may need to make some adjustments, and you have to prepare your mind to know that these adjustments, they may need to up the medication, switch out the medication, substitute, to be able to achieve that outcome of easing or reducing the number of days, the frequency of the cycle. Hope that answers the question.
Yes, it does. Thank you very much.
You're most welcome. I want all, we really underestimate this thing called stress and cortisol. This morning we talked about Parkinson's. Here's the thing. Despite the fact that Parkinson's is one of those neurodegenerative diseases where there's a drop or a reduced amount of dopamine, there's considerable research. So one can be on the dopamine medication. One can be on substitutes. There's considerable research to show that if a person is in a stressful environment, they will produce those tremors more so. They will produce more symptoms of the irritability. And stress, anxiety, depression directly impacts on the outcome. That one is where we have a host of research. However, that impacts upon just about every single part of our body, every organ. So when it comes to anything with hormonal influences and imbalances, keep in mind our sleeping habits. Keep in mind our stress levels. And one of my friends told me, I hope you're not burning the candle on both ends, because I tend to be writing in the night and doing my normal functioning, seeing my patients in the day. So my sleep habits needed to be adjusted. And yes, I also have to manage my stress levels. So we're all in this journey of optimizing our health together.
Sometimes people tend to forget that doctors are human beings as well, you know? All right, here's the one coming from Sangi. Let's take care of some of our WhatsApp messages. We have a lot. All right, is it possible for the liver to recover from beginning stage liver failure? They didn't say exactly what number of stages.
Right.
Said stage liver failure.
So, yes, the brilliant thing about the liver is that you can function on just about only 10% of your liver. It's one of those organs, and that's why we have so many alcoholics walking around and still having a fairly normal functioning liver. We don't want the liver to reach a stage of liver failure. It obviously depends on what stage it is at and the intensity to the remedy, the medications, the treatment, the surgical treatment that you're on. However, let's not push the bar too much. Literally, let's ensure that you recover the liver and not worsen any of the trigger points.
All right, here's another question. Good day. Does excessive omega-3 cause bleeding, such as in the teeth and other parts?
So yes, it can. Anything in overuse can certainly cause that bleeding. Now, there is that association with the overuse of the omega-3 supplements if there is, again, out of the usual recommended. And that's for any nutrient that you're taking, any multivitamin that you're taking. Keep in mind, because it impacts directly on the thrombotic pathway, it can not only affect the bleeding, there is association of some of the side effects of your omega-3 where it can cause headaches, it can have this unusual type of heartburn, it can even lead to gut mobility concerns, diarrhea, nausea, etc. Everything within normal ranges and in moderation. We continue to advise that.
All right. Good day, doctor. My pinched nerve has me in lots of pain. What can I use to help me other than all those painkillers? Thank you.
So when it comes to a pinched nerve, and actually we had this conversation just this morning as well on TV, pinched nerve presents with a lot of pain. It is debilitating. It's to a point where you can't even move. The painkillers would be necessary to ease that pain. But here's what helps as well. Let your healthcare physician guide you, because it should be recommended based on the level at which the nerve is pinched, on the type of physiotherapy exercises that can bring that area some relief. Sometimes it may be just the stretching or hyperflexing. So let's say it's in the lumbar area. That's the lower back. Sometimes a hyperflex, that is in the reverse way, not bending over but bending the reverse way, can actually help. There's even the utilization of certain yoga practices, certain stretches within yoga that can help elongate the entire spinal canal, and that eases some of that pain. Of course, let it be guided by your healthcare professional. Don't just go to Dr. Google and search up a couple exercises and think, well, this is what you can do at home, because you could worsen the situation. Physiotherapy helps tremendously, and it has enough patients that have tried it that can offer that support. And then, I know definitely your healthcare physician will give you that guidance.
All right. Hi, Doc. Is there any way a 50-year-old can increase his or her metabolism?
I like that question. I'm often asked that one. Yes, good old exercise. Exercise is a way to get that metabolic rate going. What's also important is eating frequently but small meals. Talk to any diabetic. Talk to any person who's trying to lose weight or on that intermittent fasting. They'll tell you they had a conversation on increasing their metabolic rates. So what you want to do is have small meals throughout the day rather than the big heavy meals that Trinidadians like to do. But exercise is your foremost way of increasing your metabolism. Balance it off again with your hydration. You don't want to put your body in deficit. If you put your body in deficit, so say you go about exercising and not well hydrated, you're going to start to feel your body cramping. You're going to start to feel the body going through something called ketosis. So always put everything into balance. Hope that answers the question.
I know somebody, a good friend of mine, is saying, hey, the doctor, exercise, exercise, exercise. Very important. All right, folks, of course, you're listening to the Lunchtime Doctor. Of course, 627-3223, 625-2257. We're on Sangit 106.1, Sky 99.5 FM, and of course, Vibe City 105 FM, and right here at Freedom 106.5. Pretty soon, we'll get into our Health Plus. Let's get some other WhatsApp questions. Hi, Doc. How safe is hydroxycut?
So I'd rather stay away from talking about some of those those amino acid medications. Those metabolites, I absolutely do not prescribe them. I'm not a fan of them. And yes, they're a host of side effects. So I'll stay away from giving some comments on that, but that's not something I tend to recommend. You know, over this weekend base, when you talk about the exercise, it's so important that we mix up the type of exercises. So some days you may want to do weightlifting. Some days you may want to just walk, jog. Over this weekend, my young son and I did something very new. I took him on the walk on Fort George. So we did a up hill walker. And that's an intense level of cardiovascular. And I was super amazed at his level of mental fortitude. Because we, and here's what we did. We found points to give him as a goal post. So he knew, okay, we go into that point. And he checked his time. He checked his steps. And when he realized, okay, this is as far as he could go, then we turned around.
Beautiful.
But I was super proud of this 11-year-old doing a hike. Well, it's almost like a hike up that Fort George that most adults try to stay away from.
Yep. Telling me.
Yeah. So to all those who like the exercise, mix it up. Yeah. Keep the body interested in what you're doing.
Definitely.
That is also a way of increasing the metabolic rate.
Beautiful, beautiful. Hi, good afternoon. I'm 48, so I'm guessing it's menopause stage. My period has been normal and usually runs for 5 days. I'm seeing a little spot of blood when I wipe, and it's the sixth day since my period. Is this related to menopause? Thank
Definitely.
You.
So you're going through a perimenopausal time. Last week we talked about it, and that's okay if you missed it. There are different stages that women go through. Menopause is when 12 cycles have passed and you've completely not have the period. So missed the cycle for 12 times. Now that you're going through the irregularity or cycles coming, shortening, then that is considered the perimenopausal time. It's an exciting time because it marks a change in your maturity, in your reproductive cycles. However, it's also a time when those change in the hormones can also be reflected in different signs and symptoms. You may start to experience the hot flashes. You may start to experience those mood swings. So be prepared for them and don't let them hit you where you're unprepared. Hope that answers the question.
Good day, doctor. I didn't understand the last response, so I'm rephrasing. I'm experiencing our rectal oil leakage. I took omega-3 fish oil for 2 weeks, right? Not sure if that has anything to do with it.
Okay, so thank you so much for explaining properly. We may not have heard you clearly on the call. So any sort of leakage, especially from the perianal canal, is indeed something we want to get checked out. If there's any mucus coming out, if there's any change in the products that are coming out, definitely, please get that checked out. I don't believe it's directly related to the omega-3 fatty acids at all. What is important to note is if there's any blood, if there's any mucus, if there's any sort of additional things, changes in the odor that are not typical to your usual passing stool. That, all of these things should be checked because it's not normal at all. Hope that answers the question.
All right, let's get a call here. Hello, good afternoon. Welcome to the lunchtime, doctor.
A very good day to you, doctor. Doctor, what are the symptoms of excess acid in the human body? Excess acid in the human body. Thank you.
So that's a great question. Now, here's the thing. There's a lot of myths and misconception about acid in the body. We actually need a certain level of acid in the, say, the stomach to help break down the food. And that's normal. However, when there is something called a metabolic acidosis, where the amount of acids build up in the body. See, if there's untreated diabetes, that's one of your predominant causes that will lead to this buildup of acids. You can have the buildup of the acids in the body. It can deposit in the lower limbs. You hear a lot of people talking about pains in the ankles, swelling in the ankles, tingling. That's because of that metabolic acidosis. It can affect the kidneys directly if there's that increase of bicarbonate throughout that particular organ. So yes, excess acids in the body can affect it. We all know about this heartburn that one may feel if there's a regurge. That is, the normal stomach acids go upwards instead of going downwards through the gut. If it comes up through the esophageal tract, then it can burn. Sometimes some persons even say they feel this heartburn all the way to the back of their throat. So all of this is how persons can present if there's excess acids or if there's a condition that can lead to excess acid and has untreated diabetes. Hope that answers the question.
All right. Of course, 627-3223, 625-2257, and your WhatsApp message is only at 306-1065. 20 minutes now before 1 o'clock. Of course, you're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor. And of course, feel free to message our other frequencies, and they will forward your questions to us. Good afternoon, Doctor. What is the best time to take blood pressure medication, and could you take it on an empty stomach?
Great questions. So the very last one, no, we're not taking any medications ever on an empty stomach. You can probably get away with your high blood pressure medications, but your diabetic medications, you need to eat first. Just like with your diabetic medications, with the hypertensive medications, please eat first. Best time is if you're eating in the morning time, say 7, 8 o'clock, 6 o'clock, then you take it about 10, 15 minutes thereafter. Your last meal for the day should be no later than 7 o'clock in the night. Take it about 10, 15 minutes after your last meal in the day. If you have medications that you're taking 3 times a day, then the same thing will go. It typically would be every 6 to 8 hours. So stay consistent with the time intervals rather than the time of the day. Hope that answers the question.
Hello, welcome to The Lunchtime Doctor.
Hi, good afternoon, Bates, and good afternoon, Dr. Mohammed. The problem to burp or the belch, Doc, what can cause that? Thank you, Alice Walter.
Thank you so much. So, you know, a lot of persons talk about this belching and acid reflux. Now, when one has that kind of chronic gas or bloating, that's directly related to some sort of problem within the stomach lining. There can be an infection in the stomach itself or the pyloric lining. So it is something called, you can have a Helicobacteria infection. It can also be where that, just as we're talking about, where the acid builds up, the normal stomach acids, it regurgitates. So there's something called GERD, gastroesophageal reflux disease, that may come upwards into the esophagus, and one may feel the need, feel that bloating, feel that burning of the gas, and may feel the need to belch. That is something that can either be directly related to ulcers, it could be related to GERD, or it could be related to some sort of infection by the Helicobacteria pylori. Check it out. Make sure you get it checked if you think it's something that's more chronic than usual. Hope that answers the question.
All right, let's get a question here. Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Doctor. I have a granddaughter who is 18 years old. She is not sexually active, but when she started to see her period for the first time for since she was 14, it was going good. But since October, she started having missed periods.
Okay, so I'm glad.
And a lot of cramps. Before she have the periods.
All right. Thank you so much for being concerned. So here's what we want to get checked. Once there's the missing or changing or any sort of irregularities with the cycle, after it has been normalized, that needs to be checked. There can be a number of things. It could be something called polycystic ovaries. It could be cysts within the ovaries. It could be something called endometriosis, or it could even be some sort of hormonal imbalance. It's important that she goes, you all make an appointment, or the gynecologist, that's a specialist that would take care of females' women health, and that way they can go a little bit deeper with checking the hormonal values in particular to identify if probably some OCPs, the oral contraceptive pills, can help regulate the cycles, or if there is indeed some other ovulatory procedure that's happening within the body, as in the cyst or any sort of things like that, that would also offset the normal periods. Now, I want to just jump back into the very last question, because while we talked about what causes that excessive belching, I didn't get to give you all some of the solutions. Here's some quick things you can do at home, because I know plenty of persons in Trinidad come and tell me in clinic, Doc, I have real gas, you know. Doc, I don't know what to do. So one, keep in mind you want to eat slowly, and you want to ensure you're also having some water or something to drink in between your meals. For those of the younger population, or specifically our elderly, if you have dentures, poorly fitting dentures can also trap that excess air and lead to that increased amount of belching. And to all of our males out there who are tuned in and they like to drink or enjoy a beer or two, yes, carbonated drinks and beers can release an excess amount of that carbon dioxide gas that leads to that increased amount of belching. So make sure, one, you're eating slowly. Check and see if it's dentures. Check and see if it's an increased amount of carbonated drinks. Keep your hydration in order. And if there is indeed heartburn, there are a host of medications to ease that heartburn. Remember, this is something that you can get under control and you can treat it well. Hope that answers both questions.
All right, let's go to the phone lines. Hello, good afternoon. Welcome to the lunchtime, doctor.
Yes, doctor. It's I again. Doctor. Is sleep during the day as beneficial as sleep at night? Thank you.
So it depends on if that sleep during the day is one that is brought on because of lack of sleep in the night. If there's lack of sleep in the night, then certainly you would need to build back up those hours. But the body is so set into a cortisol melatonin type system that it's sleep during the night where we would hit that brain waves, the specific REM waves, to help regenerate, to rejuvenate the body. So there's a different level of health benefits to sleep at the night. And that's why those who work in the night have so much additional, say, stress-related, cortisol-related, menstrual-related problems, because it offsets everything. You may have a extra, what they call, power nap during the day, but it's not the same health benefit as you get during sleep during the night.
Nice. All right, good afternoon, doctor. Let's get a question here from Sky 99.5. I was experiencing my back and felt, exercising my back and felt a crack in my left knee. Now I experience pain in my knee at night when I lay down to sleep.
So anytime you're exercising and you feel or hear a noise, especially in the joints, the main joints like your knee, that's not something that you want to take fondly to. It may, within that knee joint, there's a host of bony structures and something called the meniscus. It may be that there's a tear in that meniscus. So please, especially as you're having that pain, please get that checked out.
All right. Good afternoon, doctor. Excellent program. I bounced my big toe and my toenail was hurt a few months ago. I observed a few days ago that the nail has detached quite a bit and is attached a little only on one side. How should I proceed?
So that nail is definitely going to fall out. Please, at home, don't be Dr. Surgeon. That's not going to help. You probably would need to present to the health center. What I would suggest right away is at least have some sort of cushion socks. Do not have your feet exposed, because now if it really certainly gets another bounce again, it may definitely tear off and you may detach the nail from the area of attachment into the skin. It needs to properly be removed, and of course we may need to put some sort of antioxidant, antibacterial cream to prevent any intrusion of bacteria into the blood system. So it may need to treat it as a cut where you would need to dress it properly. Hope that answers the question.
All right. Good afternoon, Doctor and Biz. I hope you both had a great Easter. I had a terrible dizzy spell over the weekend. I'm 53. My period came back after 13 months. When it comes back, it's light, or that should be, it lasts for about 4 days, and heavy next 7, light next 3, total of 14 days. Right?
Okay.
So it's light for 4 days.
So tons of irregularities there. Now, what we talked about is that there is that perimenopausal time frame when there's a host of changes that happens, especially with the cycle. That is normal. However, if the cycle is coming more days than the usual 5 days, you may be predisposed for something called anemia, where the blood count goes lower than usual. Yes, there's a few nutritional foods that you can do to optimize that. We know, we're very familiar with your green leafy bhaji, you're familiar with your proteins, your legumes, all of those will increase your blood count. But let's make sure you get it checked, because any cycle that goes longer than the usual is predisposing you for increased blood loss, or something called menorrhagia. And we definitely want that treated. Hope that answers your question.
All right, let's get one more question before we go into our Health Plus, and we can return back. I have a pacemaker. I saw the heart specialist. I have to see him next 6 months. Is that too long? I am a 76-year-old female.
Okay, so if the cardiologist have said that your next appointment is 6 months, that may just be that everything is on track, you're consistent with your medications, and that's the next point of intervention. If, however, and I'm sure all doctors tend to do this, they always leave you with an appointment number if something presents that you can always return. But no, 6 months is not a prolonged period of time if things are balanced out and consistent.
All right, let's get into our Health Plus segment today.
So today actually is World Parkinson's Disease Day, and a recognition of this particular disease. Now, believe it or not, we see a lot of persons in Trinidad and Tobago with Parkinson's, but we see them way too late. We see them after the tremor in the hand has gone way too advanced. So here's some of the signs and symptoms that we tend to see very earlier on. There's a classic Parkinson's disease tremor, where you're seeing the hands shaking. There can also be problems with walking. You would find a person walking and they're not able to bend the legs as usual. So there's something called rigidity. There may even be a slowness in the movements. Now let's explain what happens. And this morning we use the explanation of, say you're thinking of a 400 meter relay. The persons that are carrying on the relay, that's your nerve cells. The baton is the dopamine, which is a neurochemical, and that baton is reduced. So there's a reduced amount of dopamine in the system. So if there's no baton, then it can't move forward. So we can't move the action forward. This neurochemical called dopamine is responsible for motion, for movement, and responsible for our emotions. So you may see someone experiencing a host, a change in their moods, and you're not too sure why. Let us understand that it could be Parkinson's. Get it checked out. There is a host of treatment. It's not like it was 10, 15 years ago where there was not enough research. Now there's a considerable amount of research, and that's also because of one particular well-known actor, Michael J. Fox, who has his Michael J. Fox Foundation, who has pumped a host amount of resources into not just the research, but treatments on Parkinson's disease. So all is not lost. In your Guardian Health Plus today, we took that deep dive, we explained it, we talked about the different types of treatment, and we also talked about how lifestyle modifications can play a role. And I want to read something in particular that's in the paper. So they say that stress can directly worsen the tremor, not just the tremor. So if a person is anxious or under stress, all the symptoms, the slowness, the stiffness, balance problems, all can worsen. The solution to these situations is not necessarily increasing the medication, but to find ways of reducing the stressful circumstances.
Beautiful. But is there something that triggers off, Parkinson's disease? Could it be your diet, high blood pressure, anything?
Right.
Anything?
So most of it is genetic in nature.
Okay.
This is one of those diseases that is not lifestyle related. So it's not a non-communicable disease like hypertension or diabetes or cardiovascular. It's definitely more genetic in nature, and one of those diseases that's consistent with the elderly, with old age,
right?
That it's actually the second most common neurodegenerative disease. Mm-hmm. The one that's the most common is Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
So persons tend to have similar type symptoms in either one.
Mm. But when Michael J. Fox got it, I mean, I remember he wasn't that
young,
that old.
He was young. Exactly. And that's something to also keep in mind, that a person can present under the age of 40 with Parkinson's.
Yeah.
So keep it in mind. And that's why if it's within the family, it's also important. You know, we have a particular way in Trinidad. We like to hide the things that we're experiencing.
Yeah.
And only after it's been diagnosed, then you hear the story. It's like the firebrand stories come around.
Yeah. Well, you know, I used to, you know.
And then
know.
I wonder, but why didn't anyone say this before?
Yeah.
And here's the thing. Most of these conditions are genetic in nature.
You have to catch them early.
Catch it early.
But sometimes you may see something off with it when somebody in your family, and sometimes as women, you may tell, you know, sometimes us as men, oh gosh, go and see a doctor, go and see the doctor, and men, you know, vice versa, you know, it happens, you know, yes. They just don't.
Fear. And especially fear. Biggest phobia.
Fear of the unknown.
Yes, definitely. And that's why these conversations open up.
Yeah.
I will tell you, however, now that we're having these conversations, and it's the conversations across the board, we have Andrew coming in on diabetes, we have the conversations on cancer across the board, we're removing the stigmas.
Yes.
So big up the TBC network for the work that they're doing and Freedom and all the other stations.
Helping a lot of people out
helping
there.
So many persons.
And another thing we have in Trinidad, the big salt, boy, the salt, you know. Tell us about this salt article.
So a lot of persons, and in fact, last week we actually had this question. What is the normal amount of salt? So we told you all that. 1 teaspoon, which is about 5 grams of salt, that is your normal, your total salt for the whole day.
Teaspoon.
1 teaspoon.
Okay.
And I put it in paper there. Now, here's what the research say. And this research is by John Hopkins, Harvard Health. Even in children, if we are able to lower their salt or sodium use in children's diet, it could prevent them from having heart disease later on in life.
Okay.
So imagine what it will do to our adults.
But of course, there's regular salt and then there's a sort of a
Himalaya healthy salt, the pink salt, yes. And why are those a little bit healthier? Because it has less sodium component in it.
Yeah.
So the percentage of the sodium is a lesser amount, but it's not a huge difference. It's still salt.
Right.
That's why in our Guardian, in our Health Plus, we talked about shaking the salt out.
Right.
And we talked about some of these substitutes. So let's switch it out. Why not use a little bit of dill? Why not use a little bit of basil? Use your garlic powder instead. Use your onion for flavoring. Right? And this is where I see in the face there, you know? Right? We have to move away from over putting salt into everything.
I try not to cook with too much salt.
Yes.
But then the let's say you're in a family, right? One has high blood pressure problems, and then the rest of the family, I mean, they don't want to cook too different. But you know what I mean? And
so what here's
do?
What we
do
tell
do?
To everyone.
Situation like that.
Cook without the salt and leave the salt on the table.
Oh, the salt, so you can shake the salt.
Yes.
One salt could have salt.
Exactly.
Okay.
Because you're doing everybody, if one person in there has high blood pressure, chances are it's genetic.
That's right.
And everyone will present with symptoms, so you're taking care of the health of everyone.
Beautiful.
Or you can have, so now you see a host of different flavorings. You know, you can create your own different sauces instead of needing the flavor of salt.
Right.
Here's a cool little one. And I learned this just over this weekend when it comes to sushi. Now, my son absolutely adores sushi.
Okay.
Like most children, they like a little something fancy. So after his exams, we took him out there. But I do not like all that soy sauce.
Yeah.
There's actually, you can utilize something called the amino acids. And one or two of these companies that are out there, we talked about the ACVs, the same company, right? They actually produce the amino acids and it has the same salt type flavor of soy sauce.
Okay.
So there's a host of substitutes out there that has a lower salt or sodium component.
Nice.
Keep in mind, it is just 1 teaspoon of salt that is your normal for the whole day.
Say that again for the Trinity Talk. I don't think they heard you. One, not a tablespoon, eh?
No,
a teaspoon of, that is a little small spoon.
Yes.
Wow.
And when you think of the condiments, when you think of the additions, all of that has a high amount of salt. So when you're adding it up, we're doing injustice body.
Yeah.
So here's a typical recipe. We're having a especially now as there's so much fried and processed, so we're having a lot of that.
Yeah.
We're not having enough water, sedentary lifestyle, not moving around.
Sugar. Flour.
Right? Petri dish for non-communicable diseases.
Yeah.
Right? There's a line called Physician Heal Thyself. And that's in one of the Christian books. I think it's Luke something. I can't remember the exact number. And that means, you know, just like the mechanic, he's fixing everyone's cars.
Yeah. We Sky 99 could probably help us out.
We need to fix and help heal ourselves, starting with the doctor, okay?
All right. All right, well, it's 1 o'clock, Doc. I mean, we've reached our time there. But, of course, get that Health Plus today. And, of course, in today's Guardian, page 18 and 19. And look it up, especially the page about the soul. Show it to your friends, your family, and your loved ones. All right, keep it up.
So join us tomorrow. Thank you to everyone that called in. Thank you to everyone that sent in your messages that keep this program alive. And of course, to all here, the TBC Network, all the wheels and the cogs that make this program come to you, our cherished listeners. Join us again tomorrow right here. Stay tuned and stay locked into the station.
All right. Thank you very much. Once again, folks, you've been listening to the Lunchtime Doctor program, Dr. Sophia Muhammad Hood, from 12 noon to 1 p.m. Mondays to Wednesdays, right here on Freedom 106.5 FM, Sky 99.5, Vibe City 105 FM, and Sangate 106.1. Do enjoy the rest of your day.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.